This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo, episode 45. Coming up on today's show, Epstein, Chris Cuomo, and Purple Towns, and more on this episode of Still Standing.
No talking points, no spin. It's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Hi, welcome to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I'm Michael Caputo. Thanks a lot for listening in. This weekly podcast can be found on stillstandingpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to an email that will alert you when it comes out. Try to get it out at the end of the week every week, but I'm actually falling a little bit behind. And I've been traveling a lot this summer. I think everybody has. But boy, what a crazy, crazy week this was. My wife and my kids and I were traveling from Puerto Rico back to Buffalo, New York on Saturday morning. And after we got through our security, and dropping off the bags and things like that, an alert came up on my phone that said that Jeffrey Epstein had been, had suicided in the Manhattan Correctional Facility, federal prison in Manhattan. And I looked at my wife, who's not real political. I mean, she has to be somewhat political to be in my house, I suppose. My kids are probably just by osmosis more political than most adults. But my wife said, what? I said, Jeffrey Epstein is suicided. She knew who Epstein was. I mean, she gets enough, email alerts and news alerts. And everybody, she hears me talking about Epstein and what his connections are to everyone. And her eyes went wide like pie plates. My poor apolitical wife saw the absolute problem with all of that. Now, because I'm a conservative and I'm pro-Trump, I know a few people, or at least I follow a few people here and there, who are into this Q conspiracy. Just like anybody on the left, has been following and watches people like Louise Mensch and other people who are way out there on their own conspiracy, their own version of the Q conspiracy. But I have some actual friends of mine who follow that Q stuff. And I always try to disabuse them of it. I always tell them this kind of thing is not what happens. This is, and then of course they were, a lot of these conspiracies, especially from the right, involve catching famous people involved in pedophilia. I don't know. I mean, remember that pizza, Cosmic Pizza or whatever it was, Comet Pizza in Washington, all those things that, I try to stay away from, the Seth Rich stuff, the birther stuff. I don't really entertain them. Most of my life I have felt that people are capable of a lot. People are capable of a hell of a lot. I'm disgusted by the human animal generally. But some of these conspiracy theories, it's a little bit out there. But of course, along comes a situation like Saturday morning at around 9 o'clock when they discovered that Jeffrey Epstein had hung himself in his prison cell. Now, the first thing we heard was that he was under suicide watch because after he tried to commit suicide late in July, they had set him on suicide watch. But as we found out later, as the story unfolded, Jeffrey Epstein was no longer on suicide watch, which really kind of, okay, you were suicidal last week. You're fine now. Don't worry. How do you take a guy who just tried to commit suicide and was actually hospitalized briefly for it and put him on suicide watch only for a couple of days, right? And then we're finding out that the warden and the two guards who were watching him just today, we're finding out that the warden has been sent to another prison and the two guards were supposed to be watching him have been suspended. So there is some culpability here. Obviously, Epstein should have been watched. Obviously, Epstein was, there were some protocols that weren't followed. And if they were followed and he still committed suicide, then we need to change those protocols. But here's the real deal. This is why my friend John, American Johnny, who was always lecturing me on Q, that's why he got a pass for me for the last couple of days. pass, because this Epstein thing stinks up to high heaven. How do we convince people that conspiracies aren't true when this kind of crap happens, where the highest profile federal prisoner in the United States of America, maybe the highest profile federal prisoner in the world, who knows, but certainly the highest profile federal prisoner in the U.S. federal system, and he commits suicide. And just days after thousands of pages of notes came out that implicated that people like Prince Andrew and some Hollywood types in, you know, being involved with young girls too young, illegal, you know, this is pedophilia, right? And these names were all in these documents that were that they had blocked or had sealed for a long time, and the judge unsealed them. And now they're starting to name names. And just a couple days later, Jeffrey Epstein is found dead in his cell. This is what feeds these conspiracies. Now, if nothing happened here, and I'm skeptical, I think something's up. If nothing happened here, then what kind of an idiot would put him in a situation where he could suicide, right? Who is the asshole who did that? Because now we're all going to be Area 51-ing about this for the rest of our lives, right? Jeffrey Epstein, who killed him? Why is there no video footage? And now, you know, we're seeing on Twitter, like, tweets from people who claim to be prison guards who said that somebody in a dress green military uniform, which means army, came in an ambulance and took somebody out, you know, 10 minutes before the news was presented that Epstein had suicided himself. You've got the people who are saying that Epstein snuck out and he's actually living on an island somewhere. I don't know. I mean, you've got the royal family. You've got the Clinton family. You've got other very powerful people involved here. You've got Kevin Spacey, who's riding around on that plane with him going to the island. I don't see any accusations front and center about young boys, but you see all kinds of accusations about young girls. All these, the fanciest of fancy people in the world, their names are starting to come out in the first tranche of documents, and then a handful of days later, Jeffrey Epstein is dead. I'm sorry. You know, here's the thing, all right? And I'm going to go back to what I always talk about. I won't bore you with it, but you know that I have been through the Mueller investigation, the House intelligence investigation, the Senate intelligence investigation, all of this based on a hoax. The Russia hoax, but it's very clear that all the people involved in these investigations knew it was a hoax, and they went forward anyway. If somebody had told me this 3 years ago, I would have told you, you're nuts. This is not what happens in the United States of America. Fast and Furious, I was kind of skeptical about, right? All of these things, as time goes on, you find out that there is real chicanery afoot. Now we're finding out that something really went down with this Russiagate hoax. You know, probably the abuse, if not the breaking of laws in the FISA courts, etc. We're going to see some people, I think, indicted through this process. We're waiting for what is now a long overdue Inspector General report out of the Department of Justice. Now that I have seen all this go down, do I believe something crazy, conspiracy-oriented thing could have happened to Jeffrey Epstein? You damn well better believe that I think it's possible. I think anything's possible in this country. So they're going to have to come up with pretty solid proof that Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. And they put themselves in this position because they allowed it to happen, because either they planned it or, and what looks, you know, also likely, stupidity, right? Here we are, stuck in a situation where we've got Jeffrey Epstein dead, allegedly of a suicide, in a situation that stinks up to high heaven, and we're sitting here trying to tell people in the Q conspiracy and other conspiracies that our government doesn't do this kind of thing, right? I guess we do, don't we? I'm sorry, but listen, the more that comes out, find out that the cameras aren't focused on the prisoner, they're focused on the front door of the cell. So no camera footage, right? You know, there are people who used to live in or work in this facility who say it's impossible to commit suicide, but apparently he'd already tried. This is not good for the Department of Justice and the U.S. federal prison system. And it's not good for the psyche of our people, of the American people. Because if General Flynn can be railroaded, Carter Page can be railroaded, if George Papadopoulos can be railroaded, if Paul Manafort, even though he did commit real crimes, it can be railroaded, if Roger Stone is being railroaded as we speak today, then you better damn sure believe that somebody could have gotten to Jeffrey Epstein, especially when you think of all those powerful people. I don't want to believe it. I really don't. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but my God, this stuff smells up to high hell. And now, after what's been going down with this Russia hoax and this politically commissioned investigation of the Trump team, you have to believe that it's possible, don't you? If you believe that Jeffrey Epstein was killed in order to save people from prosecution, I can't say you're nuts. You know how much that bothers me to not be able to just sit here and say that's a conspiracy theory? Stop being so dramatic. Stop being so, stop exaggerating so much. That bothers the hell out of me. Seth Abramson, these other freaks on the left who have been spinning the Russia hoax like their lives depended on it. You know, I laugh and point my finger at them and wonder what a joke they are. And they're still not letting go. To them, the Russia hoax is, we went around another corner with Robert Mueller's ridiculous report and doddering presentation to the House committees. Now we have proof positive that conspiracies are pretty believable stuff. Still standing.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back. MC,
hello again. It's Michael Caputo for Still Standing. Appreciate you hanging around for the next segment. You can find us on stillstandingpodcast.com. Also, pretty much all the usual suspects. I'm on radio.com and the rest of them. I myself started getting into podcasts a little more this summer, listening to them while I was on the beach in Puerto Rico. And I know there's a very dedicated group of people who follow this podcast. I really appreciate it. The people who donate, and there are several, I really appreciate it. The people who donate at patreon.com for Still Standing, we consider them to be executive producers. It's a big deal for me. You know, this is my own content that I'm producing with the help of Sean Dwyer, an expert at this kind of thing. He works in my office at Zeppelin Communications. He does all the audio and video products for our clients. But our executive producers are people like John Seifert, Henry Wotazek, Susan Havey, Thomas Fulton, Sonia Carlin, George Noonan, Darcy Swenson, thanks Darcy, Daniel Markey, Stephen Flaminio, and Samantha Lynn. All these folks are donating at patreon.com, and this keeps us in, helps us out with the cost of production. We have Brian Pizdursky, our executive producer, Jordan Gostomsky, Rachel, Jack Bromwich, Susan Stevens, Julie, Patty Freeling, Greg Mumbach, Mark Berry, Bill Grant, and Gary Stokes. As long as you keep donating at patreon.com to Still Standing, I'm going to keep shouting out to you. And you can catch us, you know, see all of our stuff on Facebook. I also retweet or set it out on Twitter at Michael R. Caputo. We get reviews here and there. We got one on Facebook, which made me blush, from Kathleen Campbell. She wrote, great political analysis, plus he fought the lawless deep state and he won. A hero fighting the good fight. Hope to meet him someday. East Aurora was my childhood home. One of the best towns ever. Kathleen Campbell, thank you. That's very sweet of you. And Kathleen is right. I live in East Aurora, New York. It's a small village of about, 5,000 people. you know, 1,500 homes, you know, 20 minutes southeast of Buffalo. I grew up here, a tiny little village, kind of straight out of It's a Wonderful Life. We don't have a Walmart. We have a Five and Dime. We don't have a Starbucks. We have a, you know, a Cornerstone Coffee, a home brand, a hometown brand. A lot of small businesses, a lot of female-owned businesses, by the way, very successful ones. Beauty Organics is a business here on Main Street in East Aurora that has really done well. All organic makeup. I don't use it myself, but my wife does, and they're really great people. Michelle over there always gives my five-year-old and six-year-old a makeover. This is a really cool town. Growing up here as a kid, I was here soon after I was born. I was born on Fort Bragg, and then my father moved back here to work for Moog, a defense contractor here in East Aurora. East Aurora also is the home of Fisher-Price. You may know that toy brand. Most of it has moved to China, but there are still a few straggling employees here at Fisher-Price in East Aurora. We've done well as a village, even though we lost manufacturing to overseas like we did the folks at Fisher-Price. And we used to be a pretty reliably Republican town. And that's changing, actually. I think there's a lot of this going on in the bedroom communities outside of urban areas. And I got to tell you, I think that's a problem for President Trump. It's a problem for Republicans in general, because as we see, when you look at the crosstabs of all the polls that are being done, real early for polls, of course, but you can examine the president's popularity among demographics without wondering about the horse race of the election. And we know that the president has a lot of problems with suburban females. It's a fact. The way he talks, the way he, you know, he is gruff, the way that he is, acted in his marriages, or at least allegedly, the way that he doesn't give a damn about, you know, being politically correct and doesn't have a problem calling out a woman as well as a man, a woman of color as well as a man. Just because he calls out a woman of color doesn't make him a misogynist and a racist. They don't get that protection, being a woman of color and a female. They don't get to call the president out, call him every name in the book, traitor, you know, et cetera, and then expect not to be hit in retaliation by this president of the United States. But that, you know, that part, I like the fight in him, but it hurts him with suburban females. And here in East Aurora, New York, we're seeing, we used to be a reliably Republican town. The town of Aurora surrounds the village of East Aurora. And the village of East Aurora is kind of like a little Ithaca, you know, a little university town. It's not. There's no university here, but there's very arts and craftsy. A lot of artists and sculptors and potters and such live around here and work around here because of its legacy in the arts and crafts movement here in East Aurora. So the village was always a little left, maybe 50-50, blue-red. But the town was always red. And now the town has tilted, and it's 50-50, red and blue, and the village is, well, the village is gone. East Aurora used to be my favorite place on the planet, and it really was for many, many years. I traveled all over the world, whether it was Seoul or Tegucigalpa or Honolulu or Paris or Moscow or Kiev or Rome, or it doesn't matter. You know, Santiago, Chile, Buenos Aires, Argentina, Sao Paulo, Brazil, you know, San Juan, Puerto Rico. All of those places have their own flair. All of those places where I've lived have their own special nature, right? And I like them all for their own. But every time, no matter where I was, I've loved East Aurora. I remember being at a sidewalk cafe in France, in Paris, with a French girl that at the time, many years ago, I had a big crush on. And we were sitting there drinking a café au lait in the shadow of the Eiffel Tower. And I'm sitting there with this beautiful, beautiful French girl. And I found myself talking and talking and talking about East Aurora, New York, a great town. How much I loved growing up there. I know they had a little, you know, Art Deco theater where I saw the Grateful Dead movie when it first came out in the 70s. And, you know, I talked to her about it, and she said, stop me for a moment in her cute little French accent and said, Michael, do you realize you need to go back to East Aurora? And I said, why do you say that? I'm laughing. I'm in Paris. She said, you're sitting in Paris and you've been talking about this village for 10 minutes. I always talked about it. I bragged about it. It's my favorite place on the planet, but things have changed. The town where I lived is now 50-50 Republican and Democrat. Not a big deal if you're living in a normal time where Republicans and Democrats get along like we always have in the past, but now we're at war. Now we're completely at war. Where, you know, we're polarized. We're in our corners. We, you know, we're on one side of the line or the other. Where, you know, friends aren't even talking to each other. I've lost friends over this whole Trump thing. I'm not going to change my politics because my friends want me to. I'm going to believe what I believe, right? But in East Aurora, it's exacerbated. I'm telling you, it's, you know, because I've got a bit of notoriety at 15 minutes of infamy or whatever because of the bogus Russia hoax. You know, sometimes my wife and I'll walk around and in the village. I mean, we've been here. I've been here on and off most of my life. It is my hometown. My wife and children have been here for 10 years. My kids are born here. This is my town. It's our town, right? But it is where I live. And people try very hard to make me feel uncomfortable. Very few people, by the way, the vast majority, even the Democrats of East Aurora, are kind-hearted neighbors. I have a neighbor on one side who's a liberal Democrat and a neighbor on my other side who has resist signs in her yard, and they're both delightful families. But then you have this hardcore contingent of, you know, I would say Trump derangement system syndrome sufferers. And for some reason around here, it's a lot of wives of native men who grew up here in East Aurora, went off to college, got married, and brought their wives and families back, just like I did. And for some reason, I don't know what it is, the darkest blue Democrat activists in East Aurora tend to be the wives of these men. It is what it is, you know, probably a fluke of sorts, but they really try and make it very uncomfortable for people who are supporters of Donald Trump. Now, I haven't had property damage, but here's the reason I bring this up. You know, Kathleen Campbell loves East Aurora. It's my childhood home too, but things are changing. Things have changed. I mean, if you look at what's going on the national level, now it's being writ small in local villages and towns. I don't know if it's true with you, but in East Aurora, New York, which was always my favorite place on the planet, there's some real negativity and, I don't know, some real assholes living here. And I guess it's everywhere. It's in your town. If your town used to be a little bit more civil, maybe a little bit more red or whatever, it's a little bit more blue. That's also the demographic shifts of the United States of America, but at the same time, it's a problem for Donald Trump, just like it's a problem for you when you go out and you're eating and somebody tells you to take your Trump hat off. I don't know that it ever happens in East Aurora, New York, but if somebody told me to take my Trump hat off, it'd be a problem. Take a look at what happened with Chris Cuomo. Actually, you know what? I'm going to talk about Chris Cuomo after this. It's important to me to talk about it. But I'm going to take a really quick break here, okay? This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo. Remember, that's stillstandingpodcast.com. Hi, welcome back to Still Standing. Thanks a lot for sticking around. Michael Caputo here, as you know. Remember, stillstandingpodcast.com. Also, on Patreon, patreon.com, where you can help support the podcast. Really appreciate it. Otherwise, on all the usual platforms, radio.com, Stitcher, etc. I've been getting into podcasts myself. I know that when you listen to one, you like it, and you give it a review on Apple Podcasts, on iTunes, you could really help out the author, which would really help us out. Anyway, sign up at stillstandingpodcast.com. We'll send you an email whenever this thing comes out. Try to get it out every week. It's slowing down a little bit because of summertime, but I'm trying to keep a consistent flow of audio out there. But anyway, we were talking at the break for a second about Christopher Cuomo. Apparently over the weekend, Chris was out with his daughter, probably with his family. By the way, you know, I'm going to give you a full disclosure here. I consider myself a friend of Chris Cuomo's. We're on the opposite side of most political things, but I've gained to respect him for things that, things that he's done for my family, which I'll just keep to myself, because there are a lot of haters out there that want to see me and my family destroyed, and Chris Cuomo was not one of them. I argue with him on his show. I haven't been on a show for a while. I'm staying off TV generally. There's just no upside for me and my family. We get too many death threats when I go on TV. But, you know, I like Chris. I enjoy his show, his people, his production team is all great people. I love them all. They're all really nice folks. They're very helpful. You know, Chris is always gentlemanly with me. He's tough on some people. He's tough on me. But he's tougher on other people, people he doesn't know, people whose kids he doesn't know. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Chris Cuomo. I know where he comes from, right? Now, you understand that over the weekend, he was probably out in the Hamptons where he spends his summers. Most successful New York City people stay, out in the Hamptons. It's not much cooler out there. It's a big scene, a big social scene. And if you saw this video that somebody put out on Twitter, I think yesterday, Sunday, it got some traction after the weekend soiree where this person found Chris and was using the iPhone to catch Chris on video after he called the guy said, "Hey, Fredo," to Chris Cuomo as he walked by with his daughter and probably his wife and other daughter, I think. And, Chris went off on him. Chris went off on him pretty hard, actually, calling it racist or whatever. I don't know if he actually called it racist. I didn't remember him calling it the R word. He said that Fredo was like the N word to African Americans, to this guy who, by the way, didn't have the stones to own up to calling him Fredo because he thought, Chris said, my name's not Fredo. And the guy said, "No, I thought your name was Fredo." What a wimp. Couldn't even stand up for his own joke, right? But he said Fredo was like the N-word. I don't know if that's true. I don't think it is, but I can tell you that Fredo is a slur to Italian-Americans. If you're Italian-American, you don't find Fredo a slur because it's just a name or whatever. And I'd ask you to think about the word Guido. How many times I was called Guido by people who were not Italian when I was growing up. There's a lot less anti-Italian slurring going on, but the whole mafia meme is an attack on the Italian-American community, and so is the word the name Guido when you're trying to be direct, or WAP, or in fact Fredo. Fredo has developed into a slur against Italian-Americans. If you don't believe me, that's fine, but I'm willing to bet you're not Italian-American if you don't believe me. If someone came up to me, and believe me, when I tell you that I get verbally abused in public often, not often, once in a while, it happens. You know, I'm a much smaller, kind of ancillary, temporary celebrity compared to Chris Cuomo, who has his own show, a fairly successful one. Somebody walk up to me and call me a Fredo in front of my children, in front of my wife. I would have done probably more than Chris Cuomo did. I'd have scared the living daylights out of the guy. Maybe I might have gone to blows with him. I don't like someone slurring my Italian heritage, and that's exactly what it is. If you don't believe me, we're going to have to disagree, okay? But I'm willing to bet you're not Italian American, because it used to just be WAP was the insulting word. Then people started calling us Guidos. Right. And Guido became an insulting word. Well, that's where Fredo is now. And The guy actually did not have the stones to say, okay, I called Gioffredo, so what's up with that? Because he actually said that Chris Cuomo, that's your name, right? Oh, wow. Someone got your name wrong. He was like, didn't even have the stones to stand up for what he said about Chris Cuomo. And Cuomo went off, started using the F word a few times. I mean, he's a hothead. I'm a much worse hothead than Chris is, but he's a hothead. And he was all over this guy. He didn't touch him. You know, there were some security people between them. I think there was probably some security at the party they were both attending. They were both clearly at some kind of an outdoor soiree in the Hamptons. They're inside of one of those temporary party tents. You could tell by the way the video was being taken. So I know the Republican right, the pro-Trump right, who gets sick and tired of hearing Chris Cuomo crap all over the president every day, are all joyfully saying that Chris Cuomo lost his shit and he should be fired, and they're running with this ball like it's some kind of effective way of countering Chris Cuomo's ability to take apart the Trump agenda. Even the president was tweeting about it, which, you know, I don't always like the president's tweets. I didn't like this one very much because, in my mind, Fredo is an Italian slur. And I don't think you should slur anybody. I don't want to see videos of people calling Muslims muzzies. I don't want to see Polish people called Polacks. I don't want to see the N-word about African American. I don't want to see this, hear this in public. I don't want my children to hear it, especially as an Italian American slur. So my 5 and 6 year old, my 17 year old are supposed to believe it's just fine to come up and get in somebody's face in front of their family and call them a slur. Of course it's not. Of course it's not. I would have probably done more than Chris Cuomo had, you know. What's really bothersome here is the how everybody immediately goes to their polar corners, Democrats and Republicans. I'm out there defending Cuomo, saying it's an Italian-American slur, because I believe it is. It's just my honest opinion. And people that are usually on my side of the issues are like, come on, man, you're on the wrong side of this. I'm not. I'm on my side. I'm not taking anybody's side here. I think Cuomo was right. I think I'd have done worse. I think the guy should have had the balls to stand up for what he said. He's such a wimp. Couldn't even own up to it. But here we are, right? Here we are. You can't even give Chris Cuomo an opportunity to vent a little bit when somebody slurs him. Or even if you don't believe it's a slur, let the guy vent a little bit. He didn't touch the guy. He threatened to throw him down the stairs. Well, I don't know. You didn't see any stairs around. Maybe the stairs to the stage or the stairs to the beach or whatever. Who cares? I don't care. He didn't throw him down the stairs. He used the F word. So what? So what? I don't care. I just got to tell you, this has gotten to the point where we're tribal. None of my friends in Big Tree, the rough and tumble neighborhood by the Bills Stadium out here in the South Towns of Buffalo, New York, none of my friends would think that that calling somebody slurring somebody's ethnicity is cool. They wouldn't think it. If somebody called me a Guido, if it was a friend of mine, I'd probably take it because they're trying to get under my skin. But if it was a stranger over in Big Tree, we'd have thrown down, right? I don't know about you. I would have back in the day. And I think Chris Cuomo got brought up the same way I did. Here's a fact. Everybody's better than this. That little douchebag who called Chris Cuomo a Fredo, he's better than that, probably. He probably couldn't resist, you know, because everybody's got their selfie sticks and video going on their iPhones. Couldn't resist. But it's childish. It's mean. It's not necessary. The guy's with his family. Give him a break, you freaking punk. I know. I mean, it's probably a guy who follows me on Twitter. Probably a guy I agree with mostly. But he's probably gone a little bit too far. Ladies and gentlemen, we all are. I do. You may do it too. It's time to check yourself. And in order to just pick on... Just so you can attack Chris Cuomo, to go out there and stretch like that and say that guy wasn't insulting him, whatever. And all the, also, by the way, look, I'm Chris pisses me off a lot. He does. He does. Steve Leisman, he gets on Steve Leisman a little bit too much. I think he's a little bit too much on this, you know, theory that Donald Trump said there are good people on both sides when it was this violent Charlottesville protest. Chris won't concede on that. I mean, I think it's absolutely true that Donald Trump did not say both, you know, good people on both sides to include the white supremacists. I don't believe it. Steve Cortez has proved it beyond a shadow of a doubt, and Chris won't come clean on it. Bothers me, right? Just bothers me. But at the same time, you know, I've got to tell you, this thing is completely out of control. And Chris, by the way, this the hit is this. You're Fredo, Chris Cuomo, because your brother, Andrew Cuomo, is governor of New York, and your dad, Mario Cuomo, was governor of New York. So you, therefore, are the less successful brother. Well, I'm here to tell you, Andrew Cuomo makes more money than his father and his brother combined. So it depends on how you're measuring things. If Andrew Cuomo had decided to go into politics, who knows where he would be? But he's at the peak of his game at a primetime slot on one of the top three cable television networks, whether you like CNN or not, right? And at the same time, his brother, Andrew Cuomo, is at the top of his game in New York State politics. If Andrew Cuomo would want to be on television, you think he'd be as successful as his brother? No guarantee. And if Chris went into politics, would he be as successful as Andrew? I don't know. Probably not. Right? Who's Fredo here? All of them are at the top of their game. You know, the two brothers are at the top of their game. There's no Fredo here. I think it's a joker's move. I thought it was a stupid thing to say. I don't think there's a Fredo in the mix. And I know that Fredo is a slur against Italians. That's a fact. Guido, WAP, Fredo. Fredo developed out of The Godfather. That's what it is. It's a slur. You don't like it. I get that. You don't agree with me. That's fine. But if you call me Fredo, you're going to get Cuomo'd. And that's a fact. Still standing. Thanks a lot for listening today. I really appreciate it. The next couple of weeks are going to be even more challenging for me to put this podcast together. I'll be on the road until August 27th. Just got back from Puerto Rico, was in Puerto Rico and on the road for 35 days or something. Came back a couple days later. Now I'm jumping on a plane overseas. Got a lot of work to do. You know, I'm taking all the money that lands on my table now after this bogus Russia investigation dried up all of our savings. You know, I'm getting involved in films, documentaries, writing a book, and I'm excited about that. Announcing things as they come. You know, I had a fairly successful public relations agency before the Russia hoax knocked us all to hell. Just like, you know, J.D. Gordon, Carter Page, you know, George Papadopoulos, all these guys. Each one of us had a successful lives before this hoax knocked us low. But now I got to build it back. You know, my company went into six figures of debt while we were trying to endure this investigation. Frankly, I could have just written it off as, a bankruptcy or whatever, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pay the vendors. I'm going to pay the things that needed to be paid. People were holding that paper, you know, knowing that I would come back at the end of this. And indeed, I am back. I have clients. I'm paying the bills. I think our company, Zeppelin Communications, will be back in black here soon, which is great. Myself and my partner, George, we're really psyched about it. But now I got to fly around like a madman. You know, I've kind of enjoyed living in my tiny little village and not having to go very far away. You know, I don't even have a second car. You know, we're not a two-car family. I walk to my my office, which is right next to the campus of the Roycroft campus, which is an arts and crafts historic campus from the late 19th century. Look out the window and there's the Roycroft. You know, I love it. And I walk here. You know, we'll walk to our favorite restaurant, the Globe. You know, we'll walk around. It's pretty laid back. Don't need a second car. But now that most of my clients aren't going to be here and I'm going to be traveling a lot, still don't need a second car, right? All I'm going to do is leave it at the airport. The problem is I don't get to see my kids so much. And we got to figure out how to make this work when all the debts are paid and we're back in black again, what kind of a business I want. I don't think it's going to be able to be the same kind of business. And I'll tell you why. I don't think I'm going to get involved in politics anymore. I know that's what the left wanted. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to drive Roger Stone and Paul Manafort and Rick Gates and J.D. Gordon and George Papadopoulos and Carter Page and everyone else away from campaigns to scare us away so that we wouldn't beat them so badly in the future. I'm not afraid. It's not that I don't want to do politics. I want to do politics. I may help my friend David Bellavia run for Congress if he runs, or maybe not, right? I think I've paid my dues. I think my family has paid their dues. I think the Democrats are going to just litigate the living daylights out of us again when we beat them in 2020. I think they're going to reinstitute investigations and call Trump aides in front of committees. They can't help themselves. I think it's going to get more violent. I think the death threats, we've had 59 threats of death and violence against myself, my children, my wife. I think the threats are going to end and people are going to get hurt. So right now, yeah, I think my family's pretty much paid our price. Maybe I could have my, I could be talked into, I don't know, but you know, it's not like anybody's beating my doors down now. One of the reasons I can't do what I used to do is that they've successfully just beat my brand into the ground. Maybe I could do TV, radio, books. It's all I'm doing now anyway. But campaigns, yeah, I think my wife would leave me. I don't know. She probably wouldn't leave me. Marina and I are madly in love, like hopefully you are with your wife. But I, you know, she at one time, we were together on a campaign in Ukraine and our campaign manager was murdered. And so later on, when I asked her to marry me, she told me, whatever, as long as you don't, you know, whatever you want to do, let's get married. As long as you don't do politics. I swore off of it, but I didn't. And then when President Trump, then candidate Trump, offered me a position on the campaign, my wife said, it's not going to end well. It's not going to end well. Please don't do this. Something terrible is going to happen. And I told her, what could possibly happen? This isn't Ukraine. This isn't Russia. Then we find out that we are living in Russia, that the Soloviki, the national security apparatus of the Obama administration was weaponized against me, my wife, my kids, and everyone around Donald Trump. You know, we were marginal in all of this. Some people really got plastered. Look, it's happening to General Flynn and Roger Stone. Paul Manafort. I mean, they're getting wiped out over this thing. Right? But I think I've had my fill. I could probably be talked into, I don't know. My wife would really not want me to be talked into it, but imagine it. You know, I spent a month in Puerto Rico, living on the beach with my kids, you know, working for the Hurricane Maria Survivors Fund, doing great work, I thought. But, you know, nobody in Puerto Rico recognized me. Everywhere I go in America, somebody will recognize me. Usually a very nice person saying very nice things, but sometimes it's not. But in Puerto Rico, they had a lot more other stuff going on. They don't really care what goes on in Washington. They're not transfixed by the Russia hoax or whatever, right? They're not. And so I'm walking around Puerto Rico just basically invisible, and it was great. I've been anonymous in my political views and my campaign work for most of my life, and I missed it. A month in Puerto Rico, no TV. There's no studios there. Very little TV. I did Fox, I think. I did some radio. But, you know, the death threat stopped, and I kind of like the quiet. I said this once before on this post, on this blog, on this podcast. When everything gets quiet and you're listening really closely, you realize what you missed, and that a lot of it was there the whole time, and you're just too cluttered to hear it. I sat in Puerto Rico, you know, anonymous, working for a good cause. I heard my daughters playing. I heard my wife, you know, doing her thing, practicing yoga, you know, taking care of the girls. Those are the things I miss the most. And I'm pretty sure that if I got involved in 2020 in some way, shape, or form beyond my own congressional district, this whole shit house would go up in flames again. I'm not willing to risk that. No, my family has already gone through too much. But hey, there's a lot of people out there that are really good at this job, doing campaigns. They're all around the president. I'm very proud of the people he's chosen. Save a couple of people I would rather not be working for him. I like the president's view of how he's going after this. I love their focus on data and the digital world under Brad Parscale. I'm into this. I'll be watching from the sidelines, cheering him on. Hoorah. Michael Caputo for Still Standing. Thanks a lot for listening in. Next week, I'll catch you from the road. And you have a great day.